Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Chapter 28, Puranjan becomes a woman in the next life, text 24.
Purim vihayo bhagata,
Purim vihayo bhagata,
Uparudo bhujangama,
Uparudo bhujangama,
Yadatam evanupuri,
Yadatam evanupuri,
Vishina prakritim.
The serpent, who had already been arrested by the soldiers of Yavanaraj and was out of the city, began to follow his master along with the others. As soon as they all left the city, it was immediately dismantled and smashed to dust. Purport. When the living entity is arrested, all his followers, namely the life, air, the senses, and the sense objects, immediately leave the lump of matter, the body. When the living entity and his companions leave the body, when the living entities and his companions leave, the body no longer works, but turns into basic material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. When a city attacked by enemies is vacated by its inhabitants, the enemy immediately takes advantage of that city and bombards it to smash the whole thing to dust. When we say, dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return, we refer to the body. When a city is attacked and bombarded by enemies, the citizens generally leave and the city ceases to exist. It is a foolish person who engages in improving the conditions of a city without caring for the citizens or inhabitants. Similarly, a living entity who is not properly enlightened to spiritual knowledge simply takes care of the external body, not knowing that the spirit soul is the principal factor within the body. When one is advanced in spiritual knowledge, the spirit soul is saved from eternal transmigration. The Bhagavatam considers those who are attached to their bodies to be like cows and asses, Saiva Gobaran. The cow is a very innocent animal and the ass is a beast of burden. One who labors under the bodily conception simply works like an ass and does not know his self-interest. It is therefore said, Yasyatma buddhi kunapi tridatuke svadi karatradi si gomri hijadi yatirta buddhi sadilena karichits janesa vigesu saivu gokara. A human being who identifies this mate or this body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsman, who considers the land of his birth worshipable, and who goes to a place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath rather than meet man of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. Bhagavatam 10.84.13. Human civilization devoid of Krishna consciousness is simply a civilization of lower animals. Sometimes such a civilization may study the dead body and consider the brain and the heart. However, no part of the body is important unless the spirit soul is present. In a modern civilization of cows and asses, scientists try to search out some value in the brain or heart of a dead man. Means that one day, sooner or later, we all have to inevitably give up the body. One, two. Shri Chaitanya Manasistam Stakitam Yehutale
Svayam Rupa Kadamanandanti Svaparandikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srinivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama
So the description of Puranjan being pulled out of a city which is being under siege of an invader is quite violent. The citizens are driven out of that city and the city is just plundered, destroyed, it is bombarded, it is finished, and as Prabhupada said, once the citizens have left, the enemy is destroying the city, and the city is no more, ceases to exist. So in this way, Srimad Bhagavatam is describing the inevitable. There is no return. There is no question of that there is no brutal end. Death is brutal. There's no such thing as a nice, soft death. Right? It doesn't actually exist. Sorry to say so. I mean, sometimes there may be the illusion that some people really are living so nice. Everything is so pleasantly arranged, and somehow or other it is granted to them that they are surrounded by loving ones and very peaceful. They seem to enter into some sort of sleep or some sort of transition. The reality is a little different. The reality is outright brutal. It says the temperature shoots up to 42 degrees, right? The point where one feels that one is being burned alive, and then suddenly drops, and the soul residing within the subtle body in a state of shock is leaving the body. So the whole transition is certainly a shocking experience, without a doubt. Still we see that in Srimad Bhagavatam we see the description of Dhruva Maharaj leaving, and there we see that Dhruva Maharaj was not, at least internally, experiencing so much trial and tribulation at the end of his life. Because although Dhruva also, like everyone else, obviously went through the physical experience of dying, which brings with it these elements that we just described, in his internal experience, Dhruva Maharaj noticed that death came before him and death offered obeisances. And then just at that very moment, a Vaikuntha plane was also present. And Dhruva simply stepped on death and used death as a step to enter into the Vaikuntha plane. And then that plane went upwards. So, in that description, we're seeing that somehow or other there is a parallel reality, the spiritual reality that simultaneously also is present and that is fully revealed to the devotee. And thus the devotee is not afraid. Not even a devotee is not afraid of what comes after death, because a devotee has great faith that there is a spiritual reality. A devotee doesn't even fear death itself, which is an unpleasant process, because the devotee knows that there also the Supreme Lord will enter into the entire arrangement. And therefore there is no cause for anxiety, because Krishna will be there. And Krishna, along with his associates, which may include the spiritual master. And it may be It may be the spiritual master who appears first, or it may be Krishna who appears. That depends. Srila Prabhupada described that the pujari, who faithfully worships the deity throughout his life, that at the end of that pujari's life, the deity will come. The deity will come personally to take him. Prabhupada describes. Or we heard of some disciples of Srila Prabhupada who struggled in their spiritual life, who doesn't, and who at one point in their spiritual life, especially after Prabhupada left the planet, strayed from the path. But then somehow or other, at the very end, still, once again, turned to Prabhupada, and in their last days, completely focused on Prabhupada. And it is mentioned that, for example, in the case of Upendra, that at the very end, he sat up in his bed and said, "Prabhupada, you have come." And then fell backwards and left. So we see that in the case of a devotee, it is not just the physical experience of being forced out of the body by fever and by all kinds of other heavy elements, but that the transcendental element is very present and takes over. And therefore, we can be fearless even of the otherwise unpleasant experience of dying. Krishna, somehow or other, makes arrangements. Generally, we see that some people die very quickly and unexpectedly, but many people are dying after a prolonged disease and are experiencing also great pain in the period leading up to death. So, all right, we may not fear what comes after death because we know there is a spiritual world. All right, we may not even fear the moment of death itself along with the fever and whatever because we know that Krishna will enter. But what about the prolonged period of disease and the pain that is accompanying the approach of death? Are we fearing that? There is not even a reason to fear that also, because Krishna all along will help us. He will help us to deal with it. And he will teach us through those experiences. Just then, when we are on the verge, when we are feeling that all our strength disappears, and when we are feeling utterly helpless, then within us a mood of taking shelter takes birth that we've never had before. Because all along, although we said, Krishna, I take shelter of you, we still had some material security at the same time. Maybe it was money, maybe it was family, maybe it was friends, maybe it was a phone, and an alarm number. Whatever it was, there were always arrangements of security everywhere. And your mother, she gave you just before going on the holidays, here, take this just in case and feel, yes, somebody loves me. And even if things go wrong, I always have that person to turn to. And then when your parents leave this world, because most of us will experience that our parents believe before us. I mean, that's the law of nature. Then suddenly, you feel alone upon the world.
Well, it's filled with people, but all alone on the world.
We have seen books written about being all alone on the world. So, just at that very end of life, so many of these emotions appear and are digested. They are digested. Until step by step, we are thoroughly prepared. Yes, Krishna, I accept it. Now, now you are teaching me. Life. Life is an arrangement for our education. Sometimes there are different worldviews.
In one worldview, the world is a playground.
In another worldview, the world is a prison. In another worldview, the world is an educational institution where we are meant to learn.
So now we take this worldview of the educational element.
We are young, always too young.
It's terribly annoying
to be too young. You feel, no, I can do it. I want to do it. Give me a chance. No, you are too young.
It's absolutely frustrating.
You can't wait till finally, you get your hands on the wheel. When, oh, when will it be my turn? Are they ever going to let me? Are they ever going to give me a chance? How long do I have to wait?
Time moves along and there you are. Moment of glory has come. And now, young man, it's your turn.
You're not so sure if then you really want it. All the responsibility now, can't I just be child again and play and be irresponsible and be just free to play around? No, not anymore. Those days are gone. Now the responsibility rests on you. I feel the weight. And one gets things done. And one gets a taste. After the first hesitation, one gets a taste. A taste for the challenge, to rise to the occasion. After all, to prove oneself to oneself. Yes, this is life. This is life. Now I grow. Now I feel that I can actually do something. And a deep satisfaction begins to rise within, where I feel that I have some value, a sense of self-worth and self-esteem emerges in the heart. I am somebody.
Just wait a while, Grandpa. It doesn't last long. It will all be taken away by time. And little by little, it all breaks down. The body, while we're in it,
one tooth less, and then another. And so many things go.
All our talents go. All our abilities go.
Just like the man I met on one airport with the t-shirt that said, seen it all, heard it all, done it all, but can't remember it all.
I congratulated him. I said, great shirt.
Really good. I really like it. He said, you like it?
I made it myself. So, little by little, Purna Musika Bhav, little by little, be a mouse again. That is the design of the material world. Yes, we will rise in our glory and then be a mouse again.
Yes, you grew up from being small and again be a mouse. Again, reduced.
So the lessons in life are tough, and there you fit in your old age. And again, you need to be helped like before. Some need to even be spoon-fed in their last days, just like when they were babies, looking forward to what is coming. So, in this way, the educational aspect of life is there, where simply we are learning and learning. And we can see Krishna is holding the bait in front of our nose and we're going to bite.
Yes.
When will my day come that I can finally do it? That I will be able to prove myself, my strength, my power. And yes, we bite and we do it and we hang on the hook. And then we are being reduced. And we just, first he puffed us up. He puffed us up to think that we actually were somebody. And just at the height of our power, he cut us down little by little and reduced us step by step.
And here we are, to learn that actually we have no glory at all, no claim to fame. So this is in a way, the lesson. That's the theme. That's more or less being experienced in that educational institution.
And but a Vaishnava's life is glorious. A Vaishnava's life is not a life of reduction. Although on the material plane, all these reductionist dynamics are taking place. Also in our lives, simultaneously, our devotional service builds up. And it adds, and it increases. And that is the only thing that remains. And therefore, in old age, one becomes more and more focused, more and more fixed. All the other things disappear little by little.
So, in this way, our spiritual assets increase. Daivi sampad, spiritual wealth.
And those who have utilized their time in that way, they have utilized their time well.
Because I was many years in India, I had over the years many interactions with our Sridhar Swami, who was a substantial person, spiritually and also physically. He had a presence, so to speak. Once I met Sridhar Swami he was in Vrindavan, and those days I was very busy with management. And I met him in the guest house in Vrindavan. And if you know the guest house, you know that the corridors in the guest house are very narrow. And so he came from the opposite end, and I was going to some meeting, and I was late, so I just said, hurry, Bob, and I kept on walking. And suddenly, he took a step aside and blocked my way. And Maharaj, his belly was quite developed and solid. And he was also, his favorite sport was wrestling. So it wasn't soft, it was hard. And suddenly, I walked straight into it.
And he made a gesture, and I flew against the wall. And he pinned me with his belly against the wall. I stood there, and I couldn't move. And he says, Karmakanda Kyanakanda Kevala Vishravandala. He says, these activities of karma kanda, or of trying to improve one's life through karma, or jnana kanda, impersonalism, yeah, these are simply pots of poison. So I stood there for a moment and was thinking, oh, he's telling me don't be so impersonal. Anyway, so we had a conversation with our Sri Maharaj right there and then, and I appreciated his mercy upon me. So later, Maharaj somehow or other developed problems with his liver, this and that. Long story short, Maharaj was staying near the hospital in Bombay, the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, in a flat, and everyone knows his time is running out. So we went to visit him, and I also came. So when I came, I saw on the door there was a schedule, something like a temple schedule. But this schedule was not only giving a morning program, it gave a full day program. And it said things like, okay, in the morning, there was a whole thing, japa, this, and then at 11 o'clock, from 11 to 12, bhajans. From 1 till 2, Bhagavatam discussion, and then little break, and then again resuming at 3:30. And like that, the whole day was scheduled out with hearing and chanting. So I looked at the schedule, quite scheduled. So I mentioned something to Maharaj and said, that's quite a schedule we have there on the door. He said, yeah, I got tired of all these people that came and visited and just asked me, how is your liver? He said, I decided that I should really spend my last days in a better way than just discussing my liver all day. And therefore, I made this schedule. And it happened to be so that Gopi Paran, Dhamma Prabhu, had come from the Dhamma, and he was there, and it was time for Bhagavad Gita. And we got into it. And we had this really amazing discussion, because Gopi Paranadana Prabhu was reading from the commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita, and we were comparing them with the purports, and then discussing, and everyone was giving insights and thoughts and realizations, and I was only thinking, if only I would have brought my tape recorder, but I didn't. And very, very, very nice. And then Sri Amara said, Gopi, you spend your time very well. He said, you really spend your time very well. Very, very well. Alive by really studying Bhagavatam in depth. Very well. And then it was time for bhajans. And he asked me if I could sing Sri Rupa Manjari Pada. Sri Rupa Manjari Pada. Saying what is Samubana. The lotus feet of Sri Rupa Manjari. These are my Samubana. These are my wells. My wells. Yes. And Sri Maharaj was collecting wealth, Dairi Sampat. He was collecting this Dairi Sampat, not only in his latter days, but throughout. We know that he was the Jolly Swami, and that at the end of his life his belly was swelling up, and that he was lying on his back in bed, and that one of the devotees touched his belly, one of the GBCs. And Maharaj opened his eyes and said,
It's a boy. It's a boy. Yes. So he was not absorbed in self-pity, thinking, oh, now soon I have to leave. No. He took it lightly. He took it in good spirits. And then he told Prajabihari, who told me, you know, one of those second-hand story. He told Prajabihari, he said, you know, Prajabihari, I've been a good boy. I've been a good boy. Well, if only you could say that at the end of life, right? That's victory. Right? That's wonderful. That's glorious. If you, Sri Maharaj was a brahmachari who came to India to help Prabhupada in his preaching in India, and who decided, after being there for a longer period of time, that he might as well stay there. And he also decided that he might as well stay a brahmachari. And then he decided in 1975 to take sannyas upon the encouragement of senior Vaishnavas. And at the end of his life, he said, I've been a good boy. Glorious. Very, very wonderful. So, remembering such glorious Vaishnavas, then one can only take strength from their determination, and just satovritti, follow in their footsteps, and do the same. So they did. I should also do. And now learn to schedule, learn to organize and arrange one's life to collect spiritual wealth. Now I'm writing, and guess what? A few little things of my writing spill over into my class. What do we do? we can't help these things. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, in 1983, wrote an amazing Vyasa Puja. You can have a look at it. It's very nice. It's about promises. And he says, I'm going to try in my own words to get the mood of it, because, you know, I didn't memorize it. But he begins to say with, I was a germ, and with my presence, somehow or other, contaminating anyone I would come into contact with. But then I promised to you, I guess you know, but then I promised to give up this degraded mentality. And then there's many other stanzas in a similar mood. And the whole offering is about promise, and about promises, and he ends it. And he said, and yet up to the day of today, all my promises still stand unfulfilled. I was thinking and writing that what to speak of us. Our promises are so much more of a petty nature than his promises that were big promises. And even our petty promises still stand unfulfilled. So in this way, I was thinking, he shows us how to be a disciple. Because a disciple makes promises to the spiritual master, and then must try to live up to it. And that is what it means. And one makes so many promises, And these promises are all promises to fulfill the desire of the spiritual master in some way or another. Something that we think we can do. Okay, I think of all the 108 things you want, I think I can maybe do these three. Okay, then I'll promise that. And then even those three remain unfulfilled. He shows us the way of how to become a disciple. Simply make such promises and keep our words. So in this way, by looking at the wealth that all these Vaishnavas brought, and taking that wealth, and then trying to implement it in our lives and make it our own, taking the lives of the great souls that are described in the scriptures, taking the wealth of their example and making it our own. In that way, we can build up so much spiritual wealth that at the time of death, we might even follow in the footsteps of Guru Maharaj. And in that way, also, make a smooth and, in one sense, painless transition to the spiritual world. Let that be our endeavor, and then let that be our prayer for mercy to compensate for all our shortcomings. Mercy from the Lord, mercy from the Vaishnavas. And in that way, we pray and hope and work hard to go back to Godhead this lifetime. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? So in the present we are experiencing the physical ordeal. We're experiencing fatigue or from traveling, disease or whatever cause of weakness, and we feel so affected. So what to speak of the time of death? Will then that transcendental element kick in or dimension take over? And is it to prepare for that? Is it a matter of practice? Practice is there. Abhyasa yogi yuktena chetasa ananyagamina paramam bhuvisam divyam yanti kartam sintaya. Krishna says that abhyasa, practice, is there. So there's no doubt that if we now overcome our small-mindedness, if we now struggle to overcome the identification with our fatigue, with our disease, with all our petty little experiences and somehow or other, if we now practice to rise above, we'll stand, only stand stronger at the end. So there's no doubt about it that such practice is a great asset. But that's not all there is. Because that's all part of our reaching out our hand to the spiritual plane. But obviously there is the hand of Krishna that will reach out, and at the end that hand of Krishna will reach out so much more than we ever expected. That even when they hardly stretch out one finger, Krishna grabs it. Krishna grabs it and starts to pull, and then he has two, and then he has the hand, and then he has the arm, and then before we know it, he's lifting us. So, it's not all about practice. But practice helps, and we must. We must. But, you know, but we project our present experience on the experience of the end. But we don't understand now that we'll go into an accelerated state of consciousness. It all comes together suddenly. Every little thing that we did, every little bit of surrender comes together, and suddenly we finally do it. All life we knew what we actually should have done, but we kind of were hesitating. But then suddenly we let go. We let go, we renounce, we give up, we embrace, we take Krishna's instructions and just wholeheartedly, and we actually cry out. And therefore suddenly we just propel forwards in spiritual life. The spiritual advancement is like, it's parabolical. That means it's a curve. So it goes up slowly, and then at the end it just shoots up like that.
It makes almost an advancement in those last moments. And then Krishna is reaching out like that. Yeah.
How is it for those souls who enter again in a human body or in the body of a demigod?
Devotees or non-devotees?
Well, maybe both.
Okay. How is it for the souls that enter again the human body, or maybe body of a demigod, or... if it is for the non-devotees, then of course the whole experience is very different. Then Krishna also may reveal himself, but to a more indirect extent, not as involved. So then the spiritual dimension doesn't just enter in a magical way. The non-devotee goes through a karmic cycle. But the devotee, yes, his karma will carry. Maybe his service was incomplete. Maybe he's not ready yet to really let go of the material energy. And maybe somehow or other his service is meager, and by Krishna's unlimited wisdom, he is given another birth. Maybe. Fine. But Krishna will give all the help as he enters into that new birth. Krishna will give him all the help and all the inspiration to make sure that he carries on and develops his devotional service further. So Krishna is also very present. The demigods, when one takes birth as a demigod, one is most fortunate, because in the birth of the demigod, everything is reminding of Krishna. Just last time, when Satchidananda Maharaj was here and for his Japa retreat, he had that whole point about Narada Muni, his previous life, who was the Gandharva, who, instead of glorifying the Lord, used his musical capacity to for mundane love songs, and it was cast down to earth because the heavenly domain is simply meant for the glorification of the Supreme Lord and his representatives. So that's a very easy, very fortunate birth to remember the Lord. And if a devotee goes to the heavenly planets, then that devotee is not the same as when a pious materialist goes to the heavenly planets. When a pious materialist goes to the heavenly planets, he will enjoy all the fruits of his piety. A devotee will also enjoy, but a devotee will also remember Krishna and will stay a devotee. And will continue his devotional service also there. And then return, maybe here. Because material desires may be mixed, but
atmosphere was completely different, and almost all anxiety was gone. And I don't remember that I would experience better kirtan or bhajan as at that time in his room.
Yeah, so.
So everybody could feel something very special is happening.
Yeah. With kirtan and bhajan in the association of devotees after a lifetime of service in Sri Ramayana, something special happens. Step by step, overcoming our fear, letting go, and seeing that it's not required. Just like I did an exercise, I started with the fear for after death, or not necessary, because there's a spiritual, well, but what about the moment of death, with the high fever, etc. Said, not required, because the spiritual element will enter, don't worry, Krishna will enter there. Alright, but what about the prolonged suffering, etc.? Don't worry, because Krishna will help you to deal with it, and there's a lot to learn. So, in this way, I did an exercise trying to, at least philosophically, prepare the mind for not being so overwhelmed by fear. And by philosophically preparing ourselves, we can gradually, emotionally, let go. We can let go. So we must again and again philosophically prepare ourselves so that emotionally we can let go and say, all right, it's okay. So that we can preach to our mind, which is like a small child, and tell our small child mind, it's all right, don't worry, don't be so much in anxiety, everything is fine, it's all taken care of. Don't be afraid. You know, our childlike mind becomes pacified. That's how we can prepare. But if somehow or other, we don't get a chance to prepare, and if somehow or other we find ourselves facing death and we are still afraid, then we can take shelter of Krishna, of Guru and Krishna, and pray and take shelter of the devotees, and somehow or other we will also rise beyond. So if we don't get it one way, we'll get there the other way. But the best is to prepare, and preach to our little child mind with all the good philosophy of the Acharyas. Getting later and later. But you have the first and you have the last comment. Yeah, instead of thinking about death and preparing for the moment of death, think about serving Krishna in the spiritual world. Yeah. Make sweets for Krishna. And it's lunch. Nice point. Yeah. Well taken. Prabhupada has the ultimate word.
I was wondering about something. There are some scientists who did investigation. Remembering past lives, by Dr. Ian Stevenson, and there have been a Dutch scientist, Dr. Rommel, who wrote about after-death experiences. It seems that they always have only positive, heavenly experiences. They never talk about horrible, something like witnessing Yamadutta as a...
Have you seen the paintings of the Rumbos? Have you read Dante's Inferno? And there are also other types of more ghastly descriptions in the world, in the culture of the world.
In the past, but contemporary now, and now they're New Age people, they always talk about...
Yeah, New Age people, they're tired. Maybe it's a reaction to the Christian, hell and damnation. And nowadays, it's fashionable to say, hell doesn't exist.
was very deeply inspired with his pictures. Quite, I would call him a realist. Anyway, leaving it like that on a high note, and I thank you very much.